tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 465 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Crocodile.
Good evening.
Seda isn't with us this evening. He is going to be at the Game Developers Conference doing some work for his other podcast.
Also getting all the secrets for us for the upcoming games.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll hear some secrets that we can't air when he returns. But yeah, so it's just me and you tonight. So we were talking just before we started recording about the news. We only have a couple of items. The big one being, though, that we did get a Dandadan Season 2 promo this weekend. And it does confirm that the show will be premiering on Toonami on March 28th at 12:30.
That should be the primary replacement, I figure, right? That I think that lines up, right?
I think so, yeah. So that works out great.
It can only be because Rooster Fighter will just have started, and of course Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers are like year-long escapades at this point, so it has to be that.
I'm glad to see Dandadan returning. We kind of speculated that would be the likely thing to happen, and it is, and that's good. So we've got another, you know, stellar show on the block to look forward to. I'm still a little bummed that Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers are going to be around for a while, because I do like to see other shows come in, but it seems like we're going to be locked into this for a while, so this new lineup.
Yeah, just a quick mention for something that was announced today. Apparently Tomorrow Studios, which I think were the people behind the Cowboy Bebop live action, I think they're also involved with One Piece live action as well, I've announced that they're working on a Samurai Champloo live action with Watanabe on board. So my hope is that he's probably going to keep a tighter leash on the production than he did with Cowboy Bebop, where he wasn't really involved. We saw how well One Piece has been going. Obviously, we talked about the first season a while back. That was pretty great. I've been hearing good things about the second season, though I haven't watched myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, looks like I'm going to try again with this time with Samurai Champloo, and hopefully it goes better than the Cowboy Bebop. Hopefully it's more like the One Piece live action than the Cowboy Bebop live action.
Yeah, I never watched the Cowboy Bebop. I heard too many bad things, but I've already watched the first two episodes of season two of One Piece, and it's still great. So,
all right, that's good to hear. I haven't got around to it yet, but I will eventually.
So yeah, Samurai Champloo, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. I mean, maybe they can learn something from One Piece, like you said.
I guess I'm very curious what they're going to do with the soundtrack, given that Nujabe, hopefully I'm not pronouncing his pen name correctly, unfortunately has passed away. I guess for a while now he's been gone. Obviously rest in peace. But about him, I'm not sure what they're going to do with the music. It's going to be a pretty big open question since the music is such a big part of the original series.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll keep our eyes on that. The other piece of news, speaking of Rooster Fighter, is that we did get another re-airing of the promo that they aired before, and we just wanted to remind everyone that, yes, Rooster Fighter will be taking the spot at the beginning of the block. And that's pretty much it for the news. So let's go on to the block rundown, and we'll begin, of course, with Primal. Primal, Season 3, Episode 8, The River of Life. When I read this title, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to bring Spear back to life, but that didn't actually happen.
Well, there's something giving him life. You know, he's certainly having a time of it in some particular aspect.
Yeah, he's definitely getting hulked out. All right, so my notes say here that we're back up on the near the top of that mountain, that volcano.
The Fight Club, yeah.
Spear is being forced to be at a kind of match against these sort of gangly gray ape people. I wrote down they look like Morlocks from The Time Machine. If you've ever seen the live-action movie from like 2000 whatever, it looked just like that.
I guess my thinking was they were like emaciated like gray elves or something.
That's true too, yeah. Anyway... there's like this like
elder or something, or shaman one that comes out and has like this crown, and basically they're fighting over the crown. And Spear fights this guy. He's pretty strong, but he's no match for the undead. And he wins. Spear wins.
Yeah, Spear being immortal is kind of a unfair advantage in mortal combat.
Yeah, big time cheat. He is then led to the top of the volcano. Not nearly all the way to the top, but close to it, where all the lava is. And then there's like this little golem looking guy who's got like a ladle around his neck. And he scoops up some of this black river water that's running next to the lava, which is, I assume, the river of life.
Was it actually river water? I thought he was scooping up like little bits of like magma or something. Or maybe it would be lava. It's erupted above the surface. But it looked like he was skimming a little bit off of that. That it was, because it looked like it was super hot. I mean, I guess drinkable still, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was more like tarry water. I can't imagine it being like actual lava. It would like kill people if they drank it. So I'm thinking
But it didn't look like water either.
No, it's definitely like some kind of black tar type stuff. And I think it's right next to the lava, so it is hot. But anyway, it's got some kind of quality to it, some kind of something, because when Spear drinks it, he kind of like hulks out. He kind of like, his muscles get big and his eyes change color, and he's just sort of like gets like enraged, and he like just like the Hulk kind of.
Dude was tripping, like it was straight up drug. Dude is taking drugs straight up.
It does feel like that as it keeps going throughout the episode. He keeps like desperately wanting more of this stuff. So yeah. Meanwhile, we see that Mira, Fang, and the little Fanglings are returning to the village, having given up. They weren't able to get to Spear. And they sort of like go to a nearby little hut that's closed, and they decide to like lay the last bits of Spear's stuff down, assuming he's dead, because they thought he fell over that waterfall or whatever, and which he did technically. But it lays down like a little piece of cloth that was left of him, and then like a spear, and that's all they had of him, and that's sort of like laying him to rest. We get the commercial break, and when we come back, we see that Spear is still fighting, and now he's challenging some giant rock looking dude, and he is still winning. I mean, like, he just doesn't have any difficulty taking these things on. It just keeps they keep throwing more and more enemies at him. He keeps winning, and every time he wins, he gets to keep the crown, and it means he gets to drink more of this tarry super water that gives him strength. I don't even know if that's really doing something. I assume it is.
So I'm curious. I mean, I remember there was a montage of fights in this episode. Did we start that already, or was that later in the episode after the rock golem dude fought?
No, it kind of starts with this rock guy, and it just keep cutting back to it.
When fights keep taking hits of art, ecstasy or whatever it was. There was even like a Scotsman who showed up who was like looked exceedingly normal.
Yeah.
But that's also not a good fit for this sort of fight club being normal. Didn't he come in an eagle, or someone came in on a pterodactyl?
Well, that's coming up in a minute. It's him. He comes in the pterodactyl.
Okay.
But while all the battles are going on, because there's several of them between the rock guy and the kilt wearing guy that happens at the end, there's a bunch of them. But while all that's happening, we keep cutting back to the village. We see that Mira is giving birth, so she ends up having their kid. We see that at the same time, Spear just keeps winning in all these battles. And like I wrote down here, addiction, ? Because it feels like he's kind of addicted to drinking this stuff.
I will also mention that it looks like something about the drugs may be affecting his memories, because it looks like he's getting, his eyes looking clearer, but it looks like he's also starting to see flashes of memory too. And I think that also ties into the end of the episode happens. But while he's, tripping, he seems to be starting to see things, which I think, again, are fractured memories and whatnot.
Yeah. And Demira is kind of, she also, in maybe a coincidence or maybe there's more to it, I don't know, but she starts having like thoughts and visions of Spear, thinking that there's something going on with him. He's still out there. She doesn't believe he's dead, because she wakes up from like a dream, and she's like, looks out the window at him. And at the same time, Spear is kind of thinking of her. And this is when he fights the guy in the kilt. And that's the guy who comes riding in on a pterodactyl. And, of course, like with every enemy, he just defeats him pretty easily. And it's all very gruesome. I mean, I like the battle stuff because it's like doesn't pull any punches.
Yeah, this is definitely the most metal the show's been in a good bit.
Yeah, I actually wrote down in the thread, it's like this reminds me of the 1981 movie Heavy Metal.
Ah, well, there you go.
Like, especially at the end of the episode where Spear's riding on this pterodactyl, because that's something that happens in that movie. But anyway, he decides he's going to go check in on Mira, so he unhooks the pterodactyl and then rides it back to the village. He sneaks in when everyone's, like, asleep and stuff, so nobody sees him. He sees his newborn baby, realizes it's his baby, but then he doesn't stay. He flies away. Can't remember why. I think I may have been writing down why he left. I don't know if he was just ashamed or...
I think he started hearing some commotion and he's worried. I think the villagers might see him or something. I feel like that's what happened, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like I said, I think I looked away for a moment and I didn't see why he was leaving. But anyway, he takes off. But I think Mira's too much onto him. She kind of sees the pterodactyl flying away and kind of pulls out this map and realizes, okay, there's this old map that shows where birds sometimes are flying things appear around this mountain. She puts two and two together and realizes he must be at that mountain, so she decides to follow him. And that's where the episode ends.
I'm not sure she saw him, but she definitely knew someone was spying on her and the baby, and I think she pieced it together. It must have been him or something. Because as you mentioned, there was, I don't know if it was some kind of psychic link or it was just coincidence. They were definitely like on each other's vibe, even through that distance. So
yeah,
he was obviously on her mind. And so when he came to visit, even if she didn't see him per se, she like understood that someone was watching them because she saw someone run away. And then so I think she just, as you said, pieced it together that it must have been him. Now he's going to go off and find him because he's still alive. So
yeah,
come see your baby, you know.
Yeah, so I am curious to see where this goes next. How many episodes we have left? Two, I think. Yeah, we have two. So
this was eight, right? So we should have 9 and 10.
So we'll see what happens at the end here. I don't know what kind of closure they're going to give Spear here, but we're building to it.
Yeah, I definitely would be surprised if Spear came back to life, but I guess we'll see.
I kind of feel like at this point it's too late. I think it's not likely to happen. I think she's going to have some kind of reconciliation between the three of them, and then that'll probably be it. He'll probably somehow like finally die for real. Well, I'll go ahead and give you my thoughts on this episode. It was pretty good. It was all right, I would say. It was not one of my favorite episodes of the season, but overall, my issue with this whole like Fight Club thing just feels like a diversion. It feels like stretching time because I don't feel like that's important to anything. I thought there was a chance it was going to build to something regarding maybe the return of human living Spear, but it doesn't, that doesn't seem to be where we're going with this. It's just like a weird mountaintop, like bunch of weirdos fighting, and that's all it is. So almost like a delay for just kind of a delay for Mira to have her kid and then come looking for him. I feel like that's all it is.
I guess the point I want to make is that I kind of tend to agree with the comment you're making in terms of that there seems to be a lot of, obviously there have been some episodes this season that have been pretty strong. It definitely feels like, I don't know if I want to say padding, but kind of like, what's the word I want to say? When you're treading water, there you go. There seems to be a bit of that. Like, I feel the season still hasn't necessarily justified itself in terms of why did we need a third season? Like, again, there have been some good episodes, I'd say, here, but did we need this? I don't really know, and I don't think the season has justified itself enough so far.
Yeah, I'm not against this season, per se, because I think it is exploring an interesting idea of, like, I don't know how to explain it, but like the idea of like making a show around following a zombie around and the zombie like going through it's kind of what I was saying from the beginning. It's like everything's from the viewpoint of a zombie. I think that's kind of interesting. And I do think that in that respect, Gendy is kind of doing something creative here. And he is doing something creative here. And I know that I heard that Gendy wanted to make this show because of some of the feedback he had gotten from the last season of Samurai Jack, where people were really responding to the all silent parts, like where there was no dialogue in that season, and people really liked that a lot. And so this apparently, this whole show, this whole season, I should say, is kind of a response to that. I guess Primal in general is, but this season as well is very much a response to that praise that he had gotten for that. So I think as an experiment, it's interesting. I don't hate it or anything. I think it's good. I don't know. I never was a huge fan of Primal to begin with. So I'm just sort of like, it's good, you know. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the final episode of this season, of this core, I should say, of Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 14, My Last Words. So yeah, just to reiterate, Episode 14 is the last episode of this core. There is one more core of Bleach that is being, that's coming out now. It's not on, going to be on Toonami right away, of course, but...
Yeah, coming out in July in Japan.
July so in Japan.
It'll be simul-dubbed, but obviously it'll probably be on Crunchyroll and whatnot. It probably won't be on Toonami until end of the year at the earliest.
Yeah.
If not next year.
I think it's likely to come because they pushed for it, so.
Yeah, I'll be stunned if they did the legwork or arm work or signed the contracts or whatever to get the first three cores on here and then never get around to the fourth one.
Yeah.
Like obviously, we've had a lot of shows that kind of not continue on, Enforce, Fire Force, and Dr. Stone are prime examples. But I think for Bleach, they make the extra effort.
I hope so. And I still hope that they bring back Fire Force and Dr. Stone because those shows are finishing. So it's like, bring those back so that we can finish those as well.
Yeah, I think they're both in their final seasons. Like, I think Fire Force has maybe five or so more episodes left to go. And then I'm not sure Dr. Stone might have a full 13 left or something because I know there was a break for that. But I mean, there was a break for both of them. But regardless, they're wrapping up. So
yeah. All right. So this episode begins and we see a very brief flashback with Uryu, and he's reading that book that we saw at the very beginning of this whole season. And he's kind of learning the true history of the Quincy's and the true history of Yuhabaha.
TLDR, Yuhabaha is a piece of shit. It always has been, always will be.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we cut back to the present. Uryu and Ichigo are kind of clashing with words and clashing a little bit with weapons. And he's, you know, Ichigo's getting on him about, like, you're going to tell me and I'm going to kick your ass. Either way, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, Ichigo's been saying that for the past, like, 30 episodes. It's kind of like, I don't know, get some new lines, bro.
Right. Yeah, it's very shonen protagonist. But he does ultimately, Uryu is, like, finally says what we've all been expecting him to say, which is...
Yeah, like, God, okay, I'm a double agent. You got me, all right? Shut up, man.
He is faking. He is doing everything he can to get close to Yuhabaha because he wants to kill him. So he's always been on their side. Of course, Ichigo has to ask the question, then why didn't you just tell us? And he's like, well, because you would ruin it or something.
I think he basically said it's only something he could do or like, and something to affect the yada yada Quincy pride. It could have been, I think more direct answer would have been, I need to do this covertly. If you were around, you would have fucked it up. I think that he didn't explicitly say that. I think he probably should have.
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of that. But I also get this impression that Uryu is saying that Yuhabaha can only be killed by Uryu specifically. That like Ichigo couldn't kill Yuhabaha, but Uryu can is what he's. That's the way I took it.
Maybe. I guess we'll see. I'm trying to remember, I think from cultural osmosis, my understanding is that Ichigo beats Yuhabaha in the end. I'm not entirely sure how that goes. And of course, being that the next core is going to have heavy rewrites, it might not actually end that way. So like, even if the manga ended that way, it could actually be known Uru is the one who does the final blow. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But I guess we'll see how it plays out in the final season. Right.
Well, don't tell me anything you've heard from cultural osmosis either, because I don't want to be spoiled, even if you're right.
I mean, the reason I bring it up is because it's already been said that the final core is going to have many, many, many changes. So even if that's how it played out before, it may not play out the same way. Though that's the only reason why I felt saying that, because I heard this, but I also know they told us they're changing lots of stuff. So even if that was true in the past, it may no longer be true in the future.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, like I said, they continue to fight. Then we do see a brief scene of the Barbies arriving at Yuhavaha's like throne room, and they're like getting ready to attack him. We get cuts to other fights that are going on, so we know that the fight with the giant and the fight with, you know, all the other fights are still happening.
I mean, Gerard and Askin.
Yeah. And then I wrote down the Vizards step up. So, like, we see the Vizards are now, like, powered up and ready to fight as well. They're going to join the fight.
Yeah, I mean, Shinji was already there, but the rest of the Vizards kind of, you know, team, you know, came with him and they're going to do the sick pose, like, ah, look at us pose, it'd be cool. And then they're probably going to do something, question mark?
Yeah, I would assume. We'll see.
Because, we'll see what the next core, lots of changes, so we'll see if they do anything, I don't know.
Then we cut back to Yukio and Riruka, who we haven't seen in forever, and I didn't expect to, but because they've been, like, waiting, and they're in, you know, her, like, room or whatever, and, she obviously is getting anxious, but Yukio says, well, we have someplace else we're going to go. And they end up going down. They end up heading down to the Soul Society. And while we're there, we see that a whole bunch of these giant, like, well, I don't even know if they're giant, but these big glowing birds are attacking the Soul Society.
Yeah, they're remnants of Lily Barrow, because you remember he got, you know, shattered by Nanao. But you see, like, they speak and they have kind of like bird faces, and like, so it's remnants of him, like his fragments or something. They fell because they were up on the royal palace, or what used to be the royal palace. Then his fragments fell down to Soul Society and then started doing shit. Then, of course, I think Kira comes to the rescue or starts killing them. Kira, I think, being the gravity sword guy who I think got murked like the first season of this arc, I think. Uh-huh. He has a big hole in his gut now.
Yeah, I definitely recognize those looking like Lilibara's like face, like the owl faces, but they had like a different sounding voice and it was weird and I didn't understand that, but now it makes sense, I guess.
I'm pretty sure they had the same voice, but it may have been auto-tuned or something, but
I don't know. Well, I guess maybe he sounded like that, but he just sounded like they were making like high screechy voices and it was like weird.
Yeah, that's bird form for you. Bird Lily, but that's still a fucking stupid
translation. It's a letdown for sure. After the commercial break, we come back and we see a brief Ichigo and Uryu flashback where they're like talking on the school roof. This happened a long time ago. He's asking him, like, why are you, you know, I forget what they were talking about. It didn't seem important.
I think it was just, they think they were talking about their fathers or something, right?
Yeah, that's right. In the present, Uryu stops fighting. This is, again, because they've already told them that they're going to work together. He says, here's what you're going to do. I've got this thing. He holds up this like medallion thing and he says, this is a sun key. If you use this, you can go to the sun gate and it will take you directly to the Soul Society. And he's about to hand the key to Ichigo, and that's when Yugram shows up. Uryu explains that only he can, this is what he said, is that only he can defeat Yuhavaha. This is why, you know, the answer to what we were talking about earlier, it's like Ichigo's like, why didn't you let me help you? He says, only I can do this.
You kind of skip around a bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then, but Yugram shows up and he's like, oh, well, don't even bother. You see, I destroyed the sun gate. So they can't use the key anyway. Now the gate itself is destroyed. And then Uryu says, no, here's what we should do. He basically says, this is the best course of action. Ichigo, let's split up. And then he sends Ichigo to where Yuhavaha is.
Right. Because Uryu explains to Ichigo that Yugram and Yuhavaha swapped powers. That's why, because Ichigo mentions that Yugram has crazy eyes. So Uryu explains to Ichigo, they swap powers, so he's asleep, so he's probably vulnerable, so go get him while he's napping and shit. And then he'll stay here and take care of Yugram.
Yeah, something about, too, that, like, Uryu is harder for, maybe, I could be reading too much into this, but I took it kind of like that Uryu is harder for Yugram to see what he's going to do, because he does, they do mention this episode that, like, even though he has Yuhaba's power, he doesn't have the full authority of it. Like, he doesn't have the full ability right. of it.
There's an exchange here where Yugram says he never expected Uri to have hope, and Uri responds that the fact you never expected me to have hope means you couldn't see it, and thus your power is incomplete.
Yeah. So they split up. And then in the final scene before the post-credits thing, which we'll talk about in a moment, in the final scene we see back in the chamber that all of the Barbies have been defeated by Yuvaha. They're basically bleeding out.
Yeah, I don't know, like, putting aside what happens in the manga or putting aside how things might change, they've always been beaten. I'm not convinced that's the end of them. It's not like Basby, where he, like, his arm was ripped off and he was, like, clearly... Like, Basby, I'm pretty sure, is dead. I mean, again, maybe it changed things next arc, who knows? Or next season or whatever. Basby looked dead. I don't think the Barbies, who are not already dead, are necessarily dead for good here. They could just be down for the count or down for a bit. But we'll see. At least that's how I interpreted it, as not
me
like
too.
They were dead.
I feel the same way. It felt like they got off easy, even though they were down. And I mean, like, I don't remember all their names, but the glutton girl was still talking and everything. So it's like, they're not in that bad a shape.
I think Lilio is her name.
I forget.
Regardless. But yeah, they're also injured, but we both agree. I think they still have some fight left on them for the next season, but we'll see what happens. But I don't think they're gone for good.
No, I don't think they're going to die. I think that they're probably going to stick around at the end. It's just that maybe they'll, like, be out of it for a little bit and then come back or something.
So. Right. Yeah, that's what my expectation too. Again, obviously Bambi is already dead, but, you know, we're talking about the ones who are still alive technically.
Right. So that's kind of when we get the credits, and then we get our post-credits omake. So they did this, I remember, they did the similar thing at the last end of the last core, where they had the little teddy bear guy come on and, like, do a skit.
Yeah, they just had a lot of time left over, and obviously they want to end it here. So they want to end it here. There's still like 10 minutes left in the episode or however much it was. So let's fill it with some funny hijinks.
So it's basically Asken, and he's explaining who the Quincy Daten are. And the Daten were like the original guards of Yuhabaha back 1,000 years ago. So he kind of goes over them and he explains what each of them were. And then it's just kind of like a comedy skit about, like, he's just talking about all of the, like, high-level Quincy's and how they're, like...
It's calling all the Bambies cringe in some fashion.
Yeah, everybody's cringe to him because all their moves are too, like, they're not elegant or whatever. And even talking a little bit about, like, some of the Soul Reapers and people like Yorichi and stuff and how their stuff is...
Yeah, he compliments Yorichi.
Yeah, he does compliment her, yeah.
And he compliments her brother, too. I think he spent more time on Yorichi. It's not lost on me that he has a lot to say about female Quincy's and Soul Reapers.
Yeah, that's true. I think it had a lot more to do, though, as well, with just the people he fought. Like, he was really focusing on the people he had battles with as well. But, yeah, and then that's kind of the skit, and he just keeps repeating certain phrases, and he's trying to look cool.
Yeah, you don't want to make if not listening to him would be a fatal mistake, which is, of course, his catchphrase.
Yeah, so it was all just a goofy catchphrase thing. And that was it. And that's the end of that core. Really very, very much a cliffhanger-y core.
Yeah. We're in the middle of several battles. Final boss is still waiting to be defeated. A bunch of people look like they could or could not be dead. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't remember how it ended last core, but I don't remember it being like literally middle of a battle. It was like things kind of settled down.
How it ended last core is that it looked like Squad Zero had defeated Yuabawa and his Royal Guard.
We're all right.
But we knew there was like two more seasons left, so clearly they couldn't have won, actually. Mm-hmm. So,
but at the time, it felt like, oh, the battle is over.
Well, it's over. You have no like awareness. Like, you don't
right,
even
well,
need
know,
to have read the manga.
I know, but I meant like, I just meant like, they weren't literally like, I like right now, I forget the name, the Gerard guy is just literally just walking around hitting people. Like, it wasn't like right. Someone was downed. Like, they're literally still fighting as they end the season or core.
Right. And same with Asken. And then, of course, Uri and Yurugram are about to fight. And so, yeah.
Yeah. To not even, like, finish those fights before they end the core is interesting. Because it's like, that's what you would normally do. All right. And like we said, you know, we won't know where this goes for a while if it ever comes to Toonami, but it'll be a while. I would say overall, I need to take some time to process my thoughts on this core. I don't know if this one was as good as the previous core to me, but I didn't hate it or anything. I don't know.
I kind of want to say it was more fight-centric, but I'm not even sure if that's true because there are lots of fights in previous core as well.
It feels more fight-centered to me as well, but I agree. I have a hard time like calculating that in my head because it's Bleach. But yeah, I don't know. I think there were things in this season I liked overall, but I have a hard time separating what happened in this core from the previous core. So,
yeah, I guess my thinking is that I'm not evaluating this arc on a core by core basis, but rather as a whole. And obviously, we're missing a big piece of it, so so there's only so much you can say. But yeah, this kind of flows together into one large arc for me. And I feel like inclined to evaluate that way than try to divvy up in seasons. And I guess we should mention, because I think we decided we're not doing the ranking for Bleach Thousand Year Blood War now. We're either going to save it till we can get Seda back on, or we may save it till we get the fourth core, so maybe months down the line. I think we'll have a discussion with him about what to do for that, but just want to mention because some people might be expecting it.
That's a good point. I'll be honest, I don't feel strongly about ranking it right now, but I don't have a reason not to. So yeah, let's just wait and hear what, see what, let's get Seda's feedback as well and see if he would want to or not, because I'm kind of the mind, I'm not really sure which way to go. So we can't do it this week, obviously, because it's just the two of us. So.
Right, right. But, you know, I think there was that discussion about now or months down the line. I think both are valid, so it's worth discussing that out with him when he's around.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next show then, Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 5, To Be Reborn. So, when the episode begins, the match with Team Y is continuing. And I wrote down that Isagi is reborn! This is basically all based on like a bunch of inner monologue that's going on with him. Where he's just like, feels like he's just finding his footing.
I don't think he'd consider himself reborn when he made this goal. Isn't it a little too early for him to be saying that?
But maybe it's like his realization that, because remember, he starts out the episode talking about like he and then like the scruffy haired like kid are the same and that they can sort of predict how things were going to happen. And maybe he's like realizing that's going to be his like is his reborn nature. I don't know. Anyway, before he even makes a goal, though, Team Y gets really close to making a goal. They almost do, and it kind of catches. I mean, I'm sorry. Team Y, yeah, Team Y. I had that right. Team Y almost makes a goal. Right. Yeah, and the Team Z is the one that's like almost like, oh my gosh, we almost got tricked there.
I think there was only a minute left, and so Team Y developed a strategy of if we're about to run out of time, we'll just do whole full court press because they draw out the Team Z offense too far out. So they do the court press, they run down the field, they only like to score, and I think Isagi does like the save, last minute save, so he blocks the kick instead of because the goalie was gonna get scored on, he was like, freaking out. They did a bunch of passing and Isagi like predicted their counter offensive and like blocked the shot or blocked the pass, I think it was there. And so that's when he took the ball and then ran back up the field. And eventually, as you wrote down here, that's when he does his score.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy because like even his teammates are like, how did you do that? And how did you get across the field so fast?
He passes it and eventually gets to Monster Kid, who then passes it, and we think the silver-haired headbutter guy is going to get it, but it whiffs by him, and then a Monster Kid saying, I wasn't aiming for you, and then we see that's when Isagi gets the ball, and then he makes the score. That's how it goes down.
Yeah, and Isagi gets the goal, and it ends up winning 2-1, and they win the game. And we get this final shot before the commercial break where we see all of Team Y is just down on their knees and they're kind of half sobbing and defeated. And he walks up to the big haired kid that was the head of their team. And he just looks down at him and he's just like in a very creepy look, is just like, I love this.
He's drinking their despair. It's like he turned to Seth Roth and just like,
yes,
just breathing in their sorrow and their dismay and their doom, just like slurping it all up.
I know this was 100% intentional by this show, but it is a little, it caught me off guard that he was just acting so creepy and like almost bloodthirsty in a way of like, this
he's been reborn into a douchebag.
Right. But again, I think as with the episode goes on, we kind of learn that I think that's kind of the goal of this whole thing.
Yeah. Ego. Yeah, that's his whole plan.
His whole plan.
Was it earlier in this episode that we saw Ego and the other woman, who, like the only other?
No, that's coming up. So when we come back from the commercial break, everyone's eating steak. And they're just like celebrating their victory, basically, over Team Y. And they're talking, and Isagi says that he can smell a goal, or they're saying that he can smell a goal, like that's his weapon. And he kind of like, Isagi himself is like not sure about this. Like, is that my weapon? Is that I can smell the goal? We learn in a moment that what he really realizes is that he has a special kind of spatial awareness. That's his gift, is that he can see the whole field.
He even had a weird like image where he was like a disembodied. Well, not just he was like a. I think they likened him to a god, where he was just watching, like he was looming as a giant figure, like looking at the entire field, like he has a fucking Sharingan or some shit.
It was kind of
a creepy image. I mean, it was effective; they got the point across, but it was a bit of a creepy image.
Yeah. Well, they all go to sleep, and somebody keeps butting their foot into his face, and that wakes up Isagi, but then he's like, oh, I can't go to sleep anyway. I'm just too restless. So he gets up and he walks around and he finds that long red haired guy named Chigiri is also up, and he's watching footage of their match, and he's like analyzing it. And this is when Isagi and Chigiri kind of discuss, and this is where, you know, ultimately Ichigi realizes that his weapon is spatial awareness, that he can see the whole field without having to look. And Chigiri explains that like most strikers can only, once they have the ball, they can only see directly in front of them, but Isagi can see everywhere.
Yeah, most people's focus narrows, which makes sense because, you know, you got to make sure you get the ball, keep right. control of it. So that kind of makes sense. But, of course, our main character having a Sharingan can see everything. So.
That's true. It is a Sharingan. Pretty much. That's funny. But, yeah, and it's also like this idea. It explains everything that's happened with this character so far in the series, where he keeps, like, kicking the ball. And he's not even sure why he did it. Now he's starting to understand that he has a sort of second sight kind of thing.
Yeah, like making passes where everyone's like, why didn't you make that pass? And he's saying, I have no idea. But of course, it's just his spatial awareness lets him instinctually realize that actually making those sorts of passes is the right thing to do, or like has the highest probability of success. But he just couldn't really explain it to himself.
Yeah.
He didn't really notice he was noticing it. And then
he asks Chigiri, he's like, hey, you still haven't told us what your weapon is. He says, I don't want to talk about it. And then he kind of goes into this whole speech about the fact that he wants to give up soccer. He wants to fail. I didn't have any more notes on that. It was a long speech he gave. He gave a reason.
Basically, what happened is he tore his ACL a year ago. And I'm sure if you have any understanding of the ligaments in your knee and whatnot, those are your joints basically don't heal very well because there's a little vasculature to them. Hmm. You don't really have blood vessels running to them very well. So, like, if you get injuries in your joints, they don't tend to heal well or heal properly. So, like, ligamental tears in your knees can be like, oh, that's end of your sports career forever. Like, right. I mean, you can still, like, live your life, but, like, forget doing sports or whatnot. So, he had that ACL injury. He's really afraid it's going to tear for good this time. And if he does, his soccer career is, like, basically over. And so, I think he also doesn't want to get injured again. I think his heart and soul wants to keep playing soccer. But obviously he's afraid his body might give out at any time, or specifically his knees. So he kind of, his heart and soul wants to keep trying, but he wants an excuse for him to be like, okay, I gave him all, I quit on my own terms. He just wants to be able to say, he wants to quit without being a quitter, but also don't want to get himself fatally injured. So he's trying to find that throughway where he can say he kept trying, but couldn't succeed, so he could quit with honor without permanently damaging himself. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. I that as you said that, it starts to come back to me. I think you're right. And we still don't know what his weapon is. I have a feeling we're going to probably learn that in the next episode. But
yeah, the preview looked like it was all about him. So
exactly, yeah. All right. This is when we get the scene where we see that Henri is hanging out with Ego and kind of doing his laundry. And I don't know where they are. They must be somewhere in Blue Lock, I assume. But they're like living together, kind of. Or dormitory, he's like her assistant.
Clearly, Ego lives somewhere, right?
Yeah, but it's probably like in the center of Blue Lock or something. But
actually, do we know if Ego lives on campus? He could just be like, because he always speaks through video call or something. He could technically be off campus and video calling.
I guess, but I just it seems like he's so invested in this. I don't think he would leave. That's just my take. I don't have any evidence of that, but and the fact that she's there makes me feel like he's in the office. You know what I mean? Like not at like his home or something, but.
Right, but the office would be like, if he was in Blue Lock, she would have to come in there as well, which she obviously could. Like, there's nothing stopping her, but
right.
I'll just, you know, it's not clear where they are exactly.
No, it isn't. You're right. It isn't clear. I kind of thought, I think at the moment, I'm just assuming they're there. But anyway, they're just having a conversation, and, you know, he's like eating some ramen and just like, you know, telling her how things are going. He says things are going really, really great. He's really happy with how things are turning out.
Comment about himself. That I think we probably could have assumed, but he did mention that he used to play soccer himself. I'm not sure if he said that before.
Oh, I don't think I caught that. Okay. Huh.
Yeah, he definitely said, because he was eating ramen, and he mentioned he used to not be able to eat stuff like this when he was like a player, because I guess he had to have a strict diet. So I think this is like pretty clear confirmation that he was a soccer player himself of some rapport. Like, you know, a coach doesn't necessarily have to have played a sport to be good at coaching sports. So we can't assume that every coach had, you know, actually played it themselves well. So, like, this is, I mean, that's often true, but you can't necessarily assume that to be true. But I think this is confirmation that he himself was a player. I assume he was probably a striker at some point, and I'm sure we'll learn more about it. But he basically mentions that about himself here.
Interesting. I'll keep that in mind. I don't think I picked up on that. And then he pops on to everyone's TV screens. Well, not everyone's. I'm sorry. He's talking directly to Team Z. He pops up on the screen to talk to them. And he's sort of giving a rundown of the match results amongst the other teams and all how they did and how, you know, how much the point differences were different and stuff like that. And everybody gets new rankings. So everybody's numbers change. And now Isagi is now the top player on Team Z.
I mean, he made the winning goal. So I think even Ego is saying that rankings were highly affected by your ability to score and how important your goals were and stuff like that. So given that Isagi basically saved their asses last game, it makes sense you'd shoot up to the top of the rankings for at least their team.
Yeah, and everybody's reacting to this. And of course, our Bakugo stand-in sharp teeth guy is pissed off like he always is.
Yeah, I think if they called it for the practice and I think everyone else went to go, you know, hit showers or eat, then Isagi is like, okay, I need to work on my stamina because that's the only way I can make my quote-unquote weapon effective. And then once he starts trying to do some running exercises, everyone else notices he's doing exercises and they're like, oh, I can't fall behind the top guy now. I got to exercise too if he's exercising. And so that's kind of what Eagle's mentioning, that 0-1, the one guy kind of inspiring the whole team, and Eagle goes on some trip about this whole thing. But I guess it makes sense what he's saying or trying to do.
Yeah, and the episode kind of ends with them all running together, and then we learn that now it's only 24 hours left until their next match, which will be against Team W. And that will be what we see in the next episode. We're slowly working our way up the alphabet.
I mean, we'll eventually get there, right? I mean,
I guess. Not this season, though. I'm assuming. Yeah, so that's it. Another episode of Blue Lock. I mean, I like the idea that we finally learned what Isagi's like special talent is. It makes sense.
Ah, yes, the main character's eye powers. That's certainly an original novel concept.
I didn't even think of that until you said it, though. I'll be honest. I just assumed
it's true.
You're totally right, though. But I'm just saying that, like, to me, it was just like, oh, he's just really good at reading the field. But you're more accurate to say that, of course, our protagonist has special eye powers.
Well, it's either that or he's a new type, so he's psychic powers. Like, I mean, take your pick, I guess.
Well, wasn't that the name of the previous episode? It was called, like, Intuition or something. I forget the name of the previous episode. It was like Intuition or Prognition.
Yes, yeah. He has eye powers, but I'm joking that if he didn't have eye powers, he'd probably have psychic powers. Or so, like, there's only so many types of powers you can have in these sorts of contexts, right?
Yeah.
So
this is not, I mean, and to be completely fair to the show, it's not actually a power. It's just like he's good at it. Like, nobody technically here has superpowers, although they kind of play it up that way, but they don't.
Right, like, they're technically within the bounds of normal human, like, ability. I mean, some exaggeration, of course, but not so, they're not actually Shinobi or whatever, you know.
It's exaggerated in, like, and we were talking about this in the group watch thread, and I this is how I think of it. It's like Blue Lock, it wants to be a superhero show, but it isn't. And so they just... But they ham it up like it is. You know what I mean? Like, the level of bringing it is so ridiculously over the top that you would think these characters are superpowered, but they're not.
Yeah, it's basically like Food Wars. Well, there are a few points where Food Wars jumps the shark.
It does.
When it was still, like, on the shark and just riding along, Food Wars are very much like that, where these are, like, reasonable and realistic, but just exaggerated for, like, comedic or dramatic effect.
Well, like what we used to say, where, like, everyone's clothes would metaphorically fly off, and it was supposed to be metaphorical, and then eventually the show was like, no, it's really happening. And it's like, what?
Yeah, right.
All right. Do you have any other thoughts about Blue Lock this week?
Two thoughts. Wow. When you actually saw the eyes of the scraggly haired kid, you know, the kid we talked about him, the leader of the other team.
Yeah.
His eyes are totally covered by his hair. When he was downtrodden and beaten, and you just saw his eyes, like, he was like a crying puppy. It was like, damn, that's a striking view. So there was that. And another thing was not necessarily applied to the episode itself, but there was a meme I posted, or a joke I saw, that someone mentioned that they felt the author of Blue Lock should have written a hockey manga, because then he could have just had them fist fight and, you know.
You know, the eye thing, though, that does remind me of one other point I wanted to... I noticed something in the episode... is whenever Isagi or any character uses their weapon or their gift.
Oh, they get spiralized.
They get the spiralized in their eyes. Yeah. And that's like a clear tell. They definitely stuck out in this episode.
Yeah. Again, this is obviously another dramatic effect. Like, they're not actually, like, you know, not using Mangekyo Sharingan or anything like that. It's just for drama and whatnot. But yeah, it's an effective visual effect.
All right, and that is it for Blue Lock. Let's talk about the next show in the block, which is Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers, Episode 5, Re-Leap. We're still back in the present here at the beginning of the episode, and Takamichi, like, goes to his workplace, where his, like, co-worker, whose name is Hasegawa, she tells him that he's pretty much been fired because he's been missing from work for, like, 2 weeks now.
Right. Like, she's his boss, not just his co-worker, and obviously with him leaping back in the past... already explained how his body's still in the present in stasis. So, you know, time still is moving forward. And so, obviously, to everyone else, he's just been gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah. He goes back to talk with Naoto, and they do a little bit of research. And it turns out that Draken will die in 2 weeks' time in the past. So, 2 weeks from now in the present will be when he dies. 2 weeks in the past from the present.
Right, I think it'll be August 3rd, I think is the day they say.
Oh, did he? Okay.
August 3rd, I think, obviously 12 years ago. they research, you know, some big showdown between the Tomon gang and some other gang, and Draken dies. And that kind of leads Mikey down the Sith Lord path, or whatever you want to say. And so,
yeah,
this trying is to figure out how to stop that.
Further confirming the fact that Mikey's going to go, like, he's going to become evil. And we'll learn at the end of this episode why that is. But anyway, Takamichi's like, all right, well, I know what to do now. I need to go back and prevent Draken from dying so that Mikey Sano doesn't turn into a bad guy and lead to all the bad things. So he shakes hands and he goes back in time and he wakes up. And this time he wakes up and he's inside a hostess club. And there's like a almost completely naked woman just like right on top of him. And he was not prepared for this. He's like, what the hell?
I mean, who would be? That's kind of a surprise to wake up to.
Yeah, yeah. And he kind of rushes out of there and he's like, oh my God, oh my God. And then Hinata just happens to be walking home or walking through there nearby and comes up to him and is like, what were you doing? And he's like, and she gets kind of a little miffed at him. But the important thing she says, though, is she says, oh, well, you're the different Take today. You're not the younger one. You're the more mature one. And this is when he kind of puts it together that when he's not in the past, his former past self just kind of takes back over. And so this is an interesting thing. I hadn't even considered this. I should have. But when he is not in his body in the past, he just has the mind of whatever he had before. Now, it's a little different, though. And he points out the fact that his older self would have never been so brazen as to go to like a hostess club. So he's putting it together that because he's changing his former life, his former self is kind of taking advantage of that without him, you know, when he's not there.
I think he's also putting himself in like different scenarios. So even if his personality in the past hadn't necessarily changed, just being completely different scenarios is going to kind of lead to changes in the timeline itself too.
Exactly. Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
So also, Hinata doesn't know what's going on, but she's clearly astute enough to pick up that there's pretty big shifts in personality, even if, of course, she's not aware of the time travel shenanigans. So that's obviously well on her.
Yeah, that's
good. I mean, maybe it's obvious, but it's still good on her.
Yeah, and she kind of picked up a little bit of that even in the last episode. So she's definitely, you know, very cognizant of the fact that something's going on. Well, anyway, decides to go with Takamichi to meet Draken because Draken calls him and he's like, hey, I need you to come meet me now. Get to come right now. And then Hinata's like, well, I'll go with you. They get to this sort of like shrine or whatever where they're going to meet up, and a bunch of people on bikes come, like motorcycles come riding up, and he's not sure who they are at first, but he realizes that these are other Tomon members who are all meeting up there as well.
Yeah, he gets accosted by some random members of the group, but then I think Draken comes by and, you know, tells them that everyone cut it out. Because obviously, they're like, why is this rando here? Of course, Draken reveals that this rando is kind of him, so.
Yeah. Yeah, they pick on him a little bit. Another person who comes walking up as well is this girl named Emma, who was the same hostess who was, like, literally on top of him, like, an hour ago. And she doesn't even, like, hold anything back and kind of just pretty much makes lets everyone know that, oh yeah, yeah, you were at the hostess club with me and I was on top of you. And of course this freaks Hina out and she's all mad.
Understandably.
Yeah. Agreed. It must suck for Takamichi to be like, when he comes back to the past and, you know, he's got to deal with whatever his former self did.
I think a little detail here that I didn't see mentioned in the notes unless I missed it or something, but Emma is actually Draken's girlfriend, and she was trying to, quote-unquote, get with Takamichi to make Draken pay attention to her more. So that's who she is. That's how she has connected to his group. And her plan didn't really work, but it was, I guess, a funny plan.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because I think I may have misunderstood. I know she was trying to make Draken notice her, but I didn't know she was his girlfriend. I thought she was just trying to get his attention.
I'm like 95% sure she's his girlfriend.
Okay.
I might want to rewatch, but I'm like pretty sure she is.
All right. Well, we go to the commercial break, and then when we come back, Mikey gets there.
and he goes and he kind of stands up on the stairs to the shrine, and he's addressing all of the Tomon people, and they're all kind of lined up, and they all sort of bow to him, of course. And this is, you know, like Takemichi's like, wow, people really do respect him. And he's asking about this war with Mobius. There's this other gang called Mobius, and he's like, what are we going to do? Are we going to go to war with them? And this other, like, punk kid named Pa is, like, kind of, who was Kinomasa's underling, is, like, kind of kicks Takemichi and is picking on him and telling him that, like, you know, you got my Kinomasa all in trouble, and I'm pissed off at you. And he's kind of taking it out of him. Then Draken kind of stops him.
Yeah, because Boss fired basically for, I think he was using the Tomon name, quote unquote, illegally, or at least without Mike's permission to promote his fight club.
Yeah. And we learn from Draken that there is this other group, like I said, there's this other gang called Mobius. They're led by someone named Osani. And he's like, and Takemichi's like, oh, I thought we ran Shinjuku. And he's like, no, Mobius runs Shinjuku, Tomon runs Shibuya. And
everyone's up in turf.
Right. They've got their, like, separate turf. And this is when we kind of learn why this Pa guy is so pissed off. Draken kind of lets him know, or maybe it was Mikey, I forget. But one of them tells Takemichi, he's like, here's the deal. And this was kind of like pretty dark. One of the people in Mobius had gotten a hold of Pa's girlfriend, beaten and raped her. And now she's in the hospital. And of course, this Pa guy is like pissed off. And this is when Mikey like asks Pa, he's like, what should we do, Pa? Should we go to war? And they're like, yeah, okay, we've decided we're going to go to war with Mobius.
Yeah, it's very much clear, like, obviously this Toma is kind of filled with punks and delinquents and ne'er-do-wells, but Mobius is, like, evil, for capital E-V-I-L. Not only did they do this all to his girlfriend, but he even attacked, I think, the girlfriend's, or not the girlfriend's family, his other family. I think they attacked his, I mean, we see the girlfriend's parents later, so I don't think they were attacked, but I remember a group of parents or grandparents were also attacked. Like, Mobius kind of went down, pretty far down the chain of roughing people up, so they weren't stressed. Like, whatever you may think of Toma, Mobius are like the true pieces of shit here.
So Takemichi kind of is putting things, he's kind of understanding everything that's going on now, but he's like, okay, now my job now is I've got to protect Draken. I'm going to have to stay close to Draken and protect him. Even Draken kind of catches on to this a little bit. It's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm going to be your protector. And Draken's kind of like, you're going to be my protector. And
yeah, I think he's going to runs up to Draken and say, I'm going to be your bodyguard, and Draken just laughs his ass off, yeah. Which makes sense because Draken's like twice Takemichi's size. So if there's going to be in terms of physical altercation, like obviously people can get jumped and weapons can be involved and whatnot, but I don't think Takemichi's going to be very helpful in those sorts of contexts.
But nonetheless, he has a mission. He's going to try to protect Draken from being killed. He follows Mikey and Draken when they decide to go to the hospital. And he's not entirely sure why they're there, but then they run into, he realizes that they're going there to see the girlfriend who's now like on kind of like life support there.
She's comatose and she hasn't woken up in a few days.
Right. And again, this is another nice sort of scene right before the next one where we're kind of learning, like, you know, these thugs have hearts. They don't want to see this girl. She was an innocent bystander. She shouldn't have been attacked like this. It's horrible. And then as they're getting ready to leave, and by them I mean Mikey and Draken, and Takemichi's kind of just hiding around the corner, they run into the parents of this girl, and they are so pissed off, and they're like, you thugs, you caused this to happen. You're the worst. You're terrible. And Draken just like bows very, you know, very much so. Mikey, though, he's like, he doesn't want to listen to their shit. He knows it wasn't their fault, but he's not being polite to the parents. And Draken, like, takes him by the head and forces him to bow. And it's like, no, you got to bow right now. And even though the parents don't want to hear it and get upset and leave, Draken explains, it's like, Mikey, this wasn't our fault, but it doesn't change anything. We have to be polite to these people because of what happened to their daughter. You have to think outside yourself. And this is where Takemichi puts it together.
that Draken is very much Mikey's conscience. He's a good kid, but he can also be wrong sometimes. He needs Draken to kind of set him right sometimes. And this, of course, is pretty much where the episode ends. But this Takemichi has put together now that without Draken, Mikey won't have that core that's going to protect him from turning evil.
I think Mikey's not super great on, I don't know if it's like social cues or something of the sort. I'm not going to say he's like on a spectrum. I'm not qualified to say anything with that. But he's definitely like, as you said, Mikey's a good person. There's some things about him that are like a little off or a little missing, or things that someone would pick up normally that Draken can clearly pick up. Mikey's not so great at that. No. So clearly here, like, Draken's kind of completes Mikey. They kind of complete each other. And so, yeah, this kind of, it becomes obvious through this interaction, as well as some previous ones where we saw them when Mikey first tailed them at the restaurant, the fast food place, whatnot. The two very much complement each other. They're very much bros to the end. And of course, then we see here, Draken really is like, yeah, basically Mikey's heart, so to speak, or empathy, or whatever you want to call it. He completes him. So his absence would be severely felt in terms of Mikey's kind of life path. And it's kind of very obvious to see how, if Mikey's not around, if Draken's not around, Mikey may wander off to the dark side, or so to speak.
Like clearly Draken has more maturity than Mikey does. So, yeah, I mean, my thoughts on this episode is I actually liked it quite a bit. I liked all of the new things that we learned, not just about like time travel, but about the situation, about these characters. It's pretty dark, but then I think this show does dark well so far. It doesn't really hold back, and I think that's appropriate. And yeah, I like this. Again, I continue to like Mikey and Draken very much, even though, like, I know, like you said, that like that Mikey could eventually go bad once Draken dies, but I think that at his core, he's a good kid, and Draken definitely is a good guy. So yeah. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, definitely the delinquents of the heart of gold is a well-worn trope in Japanese entertainment media, but it works well. It's popular. It's not like it doesn't describe a lot of people in real life who might be pieces, like, you know, delinquents themselves, but are still like decent people underneath all the nonsense. So, like, you know, it makes sense in that regard. And so, yeah, I'm kind of agree with you that I think this is probably one of the stronger episodes we've had so far. I think we learned a lot. It established a lot about the characters, not just, as you said, the kind of broader narrative and power set of how time travel works, but the characters themselves, which I think the important part, the big selling point. I think it does that pretty well. And you said it touches on some dark topics, but it's like, it's not edgy about them. It's not grotesque or going overboard. Like, if this SOA, we'd probably see like a detailed scene of
we didn't need to see it
with the incident with like misplaced sexy music on top. It would be a travesty. It's clearly, they could have done it really awfully. No, it was clearly touching upon dark subjects, but it was done, I think, even that mature material rather tastefully, or like touch it as much as it needed to, but didn't go overboard or too far with it.
And I know a lot of people are saying like Tokyo Revengers is like a mid show, or it's not that great or whatever. And I'm not saying it's amazing, but as far as I feel right now, it's the show on the block that I care the most about the story of. Like every other show on the block, I feel like the story is kind of like fine. But like Tokyo Revengers story actually does have me interested. And I'm like generally interested to see what happens next.
Yeah, I think my general recollection of the season was it was mid, but like, I've definitely forgotten a lot about it, so I'm kind of re-remembering. Well, now as I'm rewatching it, so, but like, obviously, my opinion or what I remember my opinion being won't necessarily be your opinion. Or it could also be that I may remember the show more poorly than it deserves, or who can say? But like, just form your own opinion. And I think, as you said, we both agreed, this episode's definitely one of the stronger ones.
Well, we've got one more premiere to talk about, so let's get into it. Let's talk about One Piece. この世界の果てなんてこの目で見たわけじゃない。だから旅立つんだ君と We Can。 One Piece episode 767, A Volatile Situation, The Dog and Cat and the Samurai.
And the monkey and everyone else, like, they could have kept going.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone was here. So at the beginning of the episode, our three sleepyheads wake up. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty much made perfectly clear here. This was not like a ruse or they weren't doing something goofy. No, all three of them just fell asleep by accident. That monkey, who has a name and I keep forgetting to write it down, he runs up and starts ringing the visitor bell and warning everybody, the samurai, there's samurai. Everyone in the kingdom can hear the bell going off and all the minks are like, oh, we need to go.
DEFCON 1.
Yeah. And we start, the minks start to accompany Dog Storm towards the city. At the same time, Cat Viper and his team are also heading there. Meanwhile, Kinemon and Conjuro are just walking on their way, and they're like, completely like, oh, this place is very nice, and blah, 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 and oh, look at that. You know, they're very kind of carefree about everything. But out of the bushes comes Momonosuke. He's reunited.
We haven't seen him in a long while.
No, he's been hiding out. He explains that he's been basically shut into a like room and has just kind of not gone out anywhere because he didn't want to be seen. And, you know, Kanjuro and Kinemon are both very happy to see him. Very, very happy to see him. This is like their big reunion.
Oh, yeah, since they separated back to the start of Dressrosa, right?
That's right. Well, everybody is converging on the city, but most importantly, Dogstorm and Cat Viper are also converging, and their like underlings are trying very carefully for them to not see each other, but it doesn't work. They end up seeing each other.
Yeah, one dude just fucks it up and just starts screaming, oh no, they might see each other, and then they just turn around like, oh, and it's like, good job, dipshit. Even everyone else in the vicinity is like facepalming, like, you fucking moron.
I think Pedro was like, no, why did you do that? And then that's when we get the commercial break, and then of course they walk up to each other, and they're just like jabbing at each other. It's, oh, I see you lost a leg, oh, I see you lost an arm, and you're weak, and you're pathetic, and I guess I'll take you out. And everybody's like, no, don't fight. And that's when Kanjuro and Kinemon are there and like, what's going on here? And they're like, no. And the Straw Hats are there and they're trying to hide the samurai from being seen. And we kind of get some flashbacks to when Jack attacked. There's a little bit of filler here, I think, where they're just sort of showing what happened with these two leaders during the fight. And then they start fighting.
I think part of it was to remind us of how Cat Viper and Dogson were injured. But I think also part of it was to really embellish how minks might not really appreciate the samurai because they went through hell over the subject. Like, all this is from the Straw Hat's perspective.
Right.
And so just kind of like, you know, just the stakes. Like, if the minks see you, it's like, well, hell's going to break loose and so on and so forth.
Well, as Cat Viper and Dogstorm about to try to go at each other's throats, that's when Kinemon comes walking up and he yells, stop this! I am Kinemon of the Wano Kingdom! And everybody just stops. And we're not sure what's going to happen. They linger on it for like a good 30 seconds.
It's taking a slow-ass walk while Usopp's shitting his pants.
Yeah, Usopp keeps going like, what? It's over. But we look and we see that both Dogstorm and Cat Viper start crying. And they get down on their knees and they say, don't worry, Kinemon. Raizo is safe. And that's when the big reveal happens that all of the minks in the entire kingdom were sacrificing themselves in order for Jack to not know that Raizo is there.
I mean, the Straw Hats were shook, but I'm not going to lie, I was pretty shook as well. I legitimately did not see this coming. I thought they were just being...
honest?
Yeah, I just did not... Yeah, I thought they were just being, yeah, we don't know what the fuck's going on. And I thought Jack was just being a psychopath, and he was being a psychopath still, but we just didn't think he actually sacrificed their lives, their limbs, their kingdom, just to protect this Raizo dude. Yeah, I mean, I was blown away. You could see the Straw Hats, like, Luffy was like, I think Luffy felt the ground in shock. I don't think I've seen him.
You don't see that very often.
You know, taken aback in a long ass time. I was just legitimately surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, and Usopp especially, too. He's crying, and he's like, why? You let your whole kingdom be destroyed, all these lives. And And they just smile and they're like, no, no, we never, ever will not protect our friends. And that's kind of where the episode ends. And then I think Luffy at the very end kind of hears him say that and they and he smiles.
Yeah, I remember that bit of Luffy. Yeah.
And that's the episode.
Oh, I think one thing to mention is that Kinemon doesn't just say he's from Wano. He says he's from like a specific clan or something. And I think the Minks respond to saying not that all of Wano is their friend, but that clan that Kinemon belongs to. And I'm sure that's going to come up later, but that I noticed that. Like, I don't remember the clan name, but it's very specific clan that Kinemon mentioned that the Minks responded to.
Yeah, it's the Kozuki clan.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And you are astute to note that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to come up in a bunch in Wano, but yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, there he's a member of the Kozuki clan, and in some form or another, both Dogstorm and Cat Viper have a relationship with the Kozuki clan, as we will learn more as this arc goes on. So, yeah, it's a pretty great moment. This is kind of one of those big moments of this part of One Piece where you're just sort of like, wow. Okay, there's big things going on here, and we're going to learn more real soon. I like this episode because I was looking forward to this moment. It was a good moment.
Yeah, not much more to say about the episode other than that the moment had been legit shook. It goes without saying, and I don't think you'll disagree, but I think it should definitely be nominated for like the best moment. Or however we're describing it. But, I mean, that was just like, I was mind-blowing legit, so in a good way.
Speaking of which, let's talk about flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Let's put that on the nomination for best moment.
Repost the link.
I will once I find it.
We should pin it, right? We should probably pin it or something.
Let's do that. I'll post it now and then pin it. So we'll call this. What do we want to call this?
The Minx protected. We're protecting Raizo all along.
Okay.
This Raizo fellow better be a big deal.
I'll say the Minks were protecting Raizo reveal. Because it's kind of the moment.
Yeah, for success, like for reals or like actually or something like that, but yeah.
While we've got the spreadsheet open here, do you think, let's take a look at the categories real quick and just skim it, see if there's anything else that jumps out at us this week.
I would have nominated Hinata probably, but you already did so.
Yeah, Seda and I last week were kind of like, you know what? Let's just go ahead and do it. She's already kind of winning us over, so.
Let's see. Anything from Bleach? From the Space League season finale, I'm trying to think.
Look back at my notes real quick. I mean, overall, I thought it was a fine episode, but it just felt very, like going through the motions. Like, it wasn't bad, but it was just sort of like, felt like we were just going through the motions of what was supposed to happen.
It's not climactic. It's more like a lot of threads left hanging because we know we're getting another season thing, kind of thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't like a big moment where I was just like shocked or anything.
Yeah. I mean, the Uryu reveal, I don't think is really surprising if you're familiar with like most fiction or Bleach or whatever.
Yeah. I think before it was confirmed in this episode, I was like, could go either way, but either way, I would not have been shocked. I was just been like, okay, so he was just duped or he was hiding it. So learning that he was just faking it was just kind of like, okay.
Well, I guess Blue Lock, I don't know if the Isagi going over and drinking the despair of his fallen foes. I don't know. That's maybe not. I don't know. That came to mind. That's probably a big moment of the episode.
I don't know if that's a great moment. That just sort of like shocks me. It's like they're really painting that a protagonist kind of in a dark way there.
Well, he's a monster, right? Or has one in him.
He has a monster in him, yeah. I wonder if that'll be a thing. I don't say, but I wonder if they'll just continue to, like, he'll devolve as the series goes on and become more and more of an asshole.
Well, I haven't seen Blue Lock. I haven't seen Blue Lock, so I couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay, okay. But you've seen Tokyo Revengers.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, like I said, I've forgotten, I think, a lot of it. But, like, I haven't seen it before, and I definitely remember how I generally felt about it. But since I forgot a lot about it, I'm definitely kind of, so it's kind of refreshing my memory, or like I'll remember things about to come up or something, but there's definitely a lot I think I've forgotten. But as I said, I remember how I generally felt about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. No real fight this week that jumps out to me. I'm getting close on these Tokyo Revenger characters, the Draken and
Mikey and Draken and whatnot. They're definitely highlights. I mean, obviously, Takemichi's the main character. I don't know. I think he's definitely he has more things to do. Like, you could probably wait on that. Like, yeah. We have a whole season. Like, he'll definitely, I think, he'll have better moments. So I don't think you would nominate him yet. Naoto is just kind of.
I'm just sort of saying it out loud that, like, I just want to kind of remind myself. It's like, yeah, I need to kind of keep thinking about Mikey and Draken and feel how I feel about them in a few more episodes.
That's fair. Primal, I guess, I don't know. Is there much to say about Spear's child's birth?
I mean, she's finally
born.
But. I think it was like we just expected it to happen. It wasn't moving or anything to me. I was just sort of like, yeah, there it is. It happened.
Fair enough. No need to force things. So.
No, yeah, that's just what I'm saying. I'm like, I mean, I appreciate every suggestion. I'm just sort of feeling like, no, that one's not jumping out at me. Unless it is for you, I'm not feeling it.
I'm not. Something definitely came to mind to at least consider, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's like, oh shit, we definitely got to get that in there.
Right.
I mean, the Asken time waster ended the Bleach episode was kind of funny, but. I don't think I'd be nominated for anything. Just it would be kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. We need some more new characters. We need some more characters so that we can get some like best designs and best names and stuff. But we're kind of settled in on characters now.
Well, I mean, there'll definitely be some things in the next season of Dandadan.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, obviously we'll probably end up renominating Momo and some other characters, but there's new stuff coming in the next season too that'll be worthy of nomination. I can tell you that much because season two is pretty great. So.
But with
Mashal gone and Bleach on hiatus for at least a good while, we're going to be missing a lot of prime name opportunities because all the other shows have people with normal names.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm totally looking forward to Dandadan Season 2.
We put Ego in here for names? Oh, we did. Yes, we did. I see him. Okay, I see him now. Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty stupid name when you think about it. Like, how did he just so happen to have that name? All right. I'm going to say, well, let's call it there. I don't think there's anything jumping out as we got at least one nomination in this week.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay, so with that, that'll be it for episode 465. Thanks a lot for being here, Crocodile.
My pleasure.
We will be back next week with the premiere of Rooster Fighter. Let's see what happens here. And until then, later.